Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
All right, everybody. Welcome to a patrons-only edition of Saints Happy Hour Podcast. Become a patron. Donate. It's awesome. You get it. Thanks, everybody. We're going to start by saying, hey, the Patrons Podcast now is sponsored by JLD Hot Sauces and Knives. Guys, they have the best hot sauces, Bucholica. They have the best assortment. It's the best. They have a great assortment of knives, handcrafted, that you can get. So go to jldsharpsauce.com. Use the code SAINTS and get 10% off. Once again, it's jldsharpsauce.com. They're the best. Use them. We love them. They're a great sponsor.
I get the regular hot sauce, and also they have this sea salt that is infused with ghost pepper, and so it's got like sea salt with a little kick to it. So I mean, it's not like overwhelming, but if you like spicy stuff, it kind of spices your salt up. It's good.
It'll change how you eat popcorn. I swear to God, it'll change your life. So the Saints are playing the Cowboys today. It's Thursday morning. People are getting this podcast. This Cowboy team is interesting. I was reading on the Ringer yesterday that Amari Cooper has like transformed their passing offense from horrible to like mediocre to kind of good. They're like top 10 in third down, and he has really transformed their offense. And people laughed at them and thought the Raiders got the better end of that deal. Like the Cowboys, it's looking like a pretty good deal. So he's a concern now for me. Like I thought their passing offense pre Amari Cooper was a joke. Now it's kind of like, average.
Have they played anyone good though?
No, that's the thing, right? They played Philly with no corners, Atlanta with no corners, and Washington, which Washington's defense is good. Like the Saints burned them to the ground, but they're still top. They're still top 10.
Yeah, I just think, well, first of all, any receiver that does well against the Philly right now, I mean, whatever. You know, because, I mean, they're down to like their...
How did Odell Beckham not have 200 yards against them?
I mean, you remember that year where the Saints, like, refused to start Stanley Jean-Baptiste even though they were down like the 15th corner? Well, that's where Philly is, except, like, whoever their Stanley Jean-Baptiste is, they're so injured at corner, they're actually playing him.
It's true.
But, no, he's definitely helped. He's a great player, and I don't know that it's transformed their offense, but you go from some games where your primary target was Cole Beasley, you know, and, you know, now with Amari Cooper, I mean, it's also just creating better matchups for some of those other guys. So, you know, every offense has to have a number one receiver. And they really didn't until Cooper came. So, you know, Lattimore is going to have to cover him, I think, and he's going to have to do a good job. But if Lattimore can hold up, then, you know, I still like this matchup. I mean, I still think the Cowboys go by Ezekiel Elliott. And if the Saints continue to stop the run like they have, and if they can play, well, listen, they're not going to hold the Cowboys like they did the Eagles or Falcons, where it's not going to be 26 yards on 16 carries. But, you know, if they can hold them like they held Gurley, you know, if Ezekiel Elliott after the game has 78 yards from scrimmage or something like that, then I mean, that's really, I think, all this defense needs to do to win this game.
Well, here's the thing with the Saints' run defense, and I saw people were arguing about it on Twitter. You know, some people say, it's not that good because the Saints are always ahead, so teams can't run the ball. But if that was true, why is Kansas City and the Rams so fucking terrible at run defense? You know, the Saints' run defense is really good, and they also
lead the league in yards per carry on first and 10.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's a telling stat because regardless of what the score is, I mean, in theory, if you're running on first and 10, like that's, you know, there's something to be said for them stopping the run. If they're way ahead, let's say by 20 points, you would think they're playing off coverage a little bit, and that would allow, you know, a team to run on them on first and 10 if they wanted to. So the fact that they lead the league in first and 10 yards per carry, that tells me this run defense absolutely is for real.
Yeah, and the thing is, you won the Saints. Congratulations, you have second and 7, you know? And
yeah.
The thing is with the Saints run defense, as I'm told, and I was convinced about this, you know, even, you know, a month in, you know, because they did it against Cleveland and other teams that wanted to run, the Giants who wanted to run the ball. If the Saints decide you're not running the ball, you're not running the ball. Now, that doesn't mean that you can't make yards against the Saints through the air, because the Giants kind of did it a little bit in that game. You know, and Atlanta surely did it the first game. They torched the Saints to the ground, and the Saints have been obviously way better. But I'm just convinced that if the Saints go into the game and they say, they're going to say, look, Zeke Elliott, you're not beating us. Now, maybe Dallas keeps it close, and Zeke Elliott ends up getting 30 carries for 120 or 125 or something like that, because it's close and Dallas can keep they're able to keep the score down for whatever reason. But I just don't see Zeke having a giant game, because the Saints, their run defense is so good, they're not going to allow it. He might have a nice game, but it's not going to be one of these games where he's going to get his and he's going to have 20 carries for $107. It's not happening.
Yeah, you know,
I just think at the end of the day, the Saints just can't turn the football over. You know, it's that simple. You know, I think if you're Dallas, the one thing here is, okay, Armstead's not playing. So can we figure out how to really victimize Bushrod and get an advantage there? I have been really pleasantly surprised by how well Bushrod has played to this point. And the rest of the line, it's just so damn good, Ralph. I mean, even without Armstead, Pete, and, you know, I know the PFF grades are bad or whatever, but I watched, if you watch, you know, the Baldy breakdowns, he gave about 4 plays and where he kind of illustrates and highlights what Andres Pete did pulling in the run game. And then, you know, I watched that game over again, just kind of see in general how he was doing. I haven't looked at Pete's grade for PFF for this week, so I'd be curious to see if they still think he sucks or if he had a great grade. But, like, he was an animal, dominant. And Unger and Warford are great. Ramchek is an animal. So, like, that offensive line, man, it's so good. I just feel like the Saints can call any play right now.
Yeah, and the thing is with the offensive line, you know my theory on offensive line, and it doesn't hold for offensive line, just for offensive line. It holds for any sort of position group, you know, is you can handle one kind of, you can hide like one guy that's maybe struggling or old or whatever on offensive line. Like they can, Bushrod, even though he's a tackle, the Saints, they have 4 other dudes that are great. So they can kind of protect him, right?
Yeah.
It's when you know, if another dude goes down and then it's Bushrod and another dude that then it starts becoming a problem. But what one sort of weak link, they can sort of hide it, protect him, and help him out, and it can be fine.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait till you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Well, what I was seeing from, like, the run blocking, I mean, the thing that's so special about Kamara is that despite the fact that he's a little bit smaller in size, the first guy always misses, you know, and that's a really special trait, I think, to have if you're a running back, where, like, the first tackler is just never bringing you down. And so, Kamara, you know, he's a guy where, like, if the play's going nowhere and he's about to get hit for a 3-yard loss, like, he turns that play into a 1-yard run, you know. And so, like, that's the thing about Kamara is he makes poor blocking look average, you know, or whatever. But some of these holes he was running through, Ralph, I'm telling you, like, you could get a 3-yard run out of it. And so, like, when you give Kamara, like, basically you gift him a 4-yard run, and, like, he's turning that into 8 or 9, of course, because it's blocked so well. But I guess that's my point. It's like, I'm looking at some of these blocks and how they're set up when Kamara hits the hole, and I'm like, man, any running back in the NFL, any single back, like, pick any back on any team, and he's getting 5 yards on his carry.
Yeah. I mean, even Gillislee was falling forward for 3 yards, and he was petrified that Sean Payton was going to murder him if he fumbled.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he was, like, hopping with 2 feet and with both hands on the ball the whole time.
No, Bill Barnwell does a thing every now and then where he'll show a hole and he'll whatever running back is running through it, and he'll multiply that hole. So he'll say, like, 6 Kamaras could have got through that hole, you know? And that's the thing with the Saints. I mean, the thing is with this defense, and you mentioned it on the podcast, the podcast on Sunday night that people should listen to. It's free, of course. But Alex Okafor is, like, coming around. Like, I felt like he wouldn't be himself until, like, December, maybe late in the year, maybe never back.
Which is when he gets hurt.
Yeah, but, like, I mean.
He'd get right about the time he got hurt.
He's due to get hurt, but unfortunately. Like, maybe it's just the same year, and they get, like, the one magical year out of Okafor. But that dude, like, I watch him against the run. Like, even though he's not necessarily the biggest guy, like, he sets that edge and it's set, and you're like, you're not getting to the corner. Like, he was just an amazing find, and you were pumped last year when they signed him. And he's been a guy, like, he's so good. I think he's an underrated key to this run defense.
No doubt. Yeah. And I think he's gotten better every week. You know, I think, you know, coming back from injury like that, I think it's just taken him some time, but you know, I think earlier in the season and, you know, the first couple weeks, you know, we just kind of felt like, yeah. Now, remember, he got hurt, too. I think he had an ankle injury.
In the preseason,
Yeah, so, you know, it may have taken him some time to recover from that, too. But I remember us just saying, like, yeah, Okafor, like, he's just not the same player. He's coming back from his Achilles. He had the ankle injury. And so I just kind of assumed we were going to have a year of Okafor kind of being like Paul Kruger, right, where he was just like, it was just obvious that, like, he declined and he's not the same player. Well, like, really kind of around the time Davenport went down, I feel like Okafor ascended to, like, last year's Okafor before the injury. And, you know, that's kind of a – and, you know, part of it is how good Rankins is playing and how good Jordan's playing. I mean, that opens up some opportunities for him. But, man, and that's a big reason why this defensive line is so dominant. And, you know, if Davenport, now, if he's healthy and they can kind of mix and match depending on down and distance, they've got 3 defensive ends that are playing at a really high level for them right now.
I mean, is Sheldon Rankin, is he going to get to 10 sacks and be the first Saints defensive tackle to get there since Glover? Like,
He might. The thing is, I think teams are going to become so weary of him that it might create more sacks for Jordan, you know. But, man, it's just a different level when you have a defensive tackle like that, because I feel like with an edge guy, like, if they're super fast off the edge, even a guy like Cam Jordan, you can somewhat mitigate that by stepping up into the pocket, you know. Like, if you feel the pressure coming, you can step. But, like, if you don't have a quarterback that can escape, like, roll out, I mean, like, if he doesn't have speed to get to the sideline – and they start getting pressure right in front of their face, like, they're fucked. And so, like, unless you have, like, Lamar Jackson or, you know, Mariota type quarterback. I mean, I just, Dak Prescott, I mean, he has some escapability, but I just think most quarterbacks in the league, most guys you face, like, it's just devastating when you have an interior pressure guy that's just constantly getting in your face.
Well,
that's why, like, you know, all things being equal, like, if you told me I could have, you know, Aaron Donald or Khalil Mack, I would pick Aaron Donald every single day.
Well, here's the thing, because even if you're like Dak Prescott, right, and if Rankin gets internal pressure and Dak has to roll out, like, he can escape, but the play is destroyed. Because, you can block Cam Jordan and they can have, let's see, you know, the Saints do their three concept where they have guys running on three different levels, right? So they have the play called. Well, Breeze can just say, okay, I'm just going to slide up a little bit, and the play can work just like you drew it up. Dude, if you got Rankins coming up the middle and blowing up your guard, whatever play you had called, it's fucking done, and it's a fire drill. And it's a fire drill. And look, it might work out in your favor because you got Dak Prescott, and he may roll around and he may find a dude. But your play is basically destroyed. And if that happens on a regular basis, you ain't gonna make it because you can't play street lock ball on 70% of your throws. It's just not gonna happen. And that's what makes Rankin, like, it's just a revelation. Like, I guess, you know, and the thing is too, you know, I think now with the draft, it's become such a big deal, and these players in college, they produce so quick, and it's like, you expect that and you demand it, and if you don't get it, you're like, he's not a good player. Man, when I was a kid, teams were like, you drafted a wide receiver or you drafted a D lineman. It ain't happened until year three. And that was how it was with, like, Wayne Martin, and that was how it was with other receivers.
Cam Jordan.
And it's still, like, it can still be that same process, and it's fine. And that's just what happened with Rankins. Like, he was really good, but it took till year three for him to go boom, you know?
Yeah. No, you're exactly right. So, you know, I think part of it's just time in the weight room. You just got to get – it's not that Rankins can never do it. He had to get stronger, you know, and he had to get, like, on an NFL regimen and get more power. And then, you know, the technique and the quickness were always there. And it's just, you know, it's just the power and the endurance of being able to last for four quarters in terms of just the wear and tear that you take over the course of a game. I just, being a defensive tackle at Louisville just doesn't prepare you for that. So it just takes time. But, you know, I think physically he's at a point now where he's been healthy. And, you know, the first couple years, too, Rankins, you know, I think had some injuries. He had the broken leg, and then last year he's banged up. And there's little stuff that I think slows your development a little bit. But, you know, if you get a lot of time in the weight room, you develop your power, you develop your endurance, and then you start to get a stretch where you're healthy, then you're starting to see kind of the reasons that they drafted him in the first place, the potential stuff kind of come into light. And now – he's a Pro Bowler. He's a Pro Bowl type player. So that's great to see. But, yeah, to me, I think if you're a Dallas Cowboys fan, you look at DeMarcus Lawrence, you look at your defense, you look at your balanced defense, you've got to be thinking, let's attack Jermaine Bushrod. And if you look at the Saints, you know, Tyron Smith has been out. I don't know if he's going to play in this game. It looks like he's not practicing. But, like, same thing. I think Okafor and Davenport have to murder the left tackle for the Cowboys. So this is an interesting kind of dichotomy between two teams because I think they're missing a superstar left tackle. You've got defenses that play well on that side. So that's the X factor for me, like which left tackle, if we're dealing with two backups, one backup for each team, which one holds up better against the certain test?
Yeah, and here's the final thing before we get to predictions or changes on that. You know, I want to talk a little bit about Teddy Bridgewater in that look. The Saints traded for him. It was a huge deal right before the season starts, and he's been sort of quiet. You know, obviously it's great because Breeze is playing and it's going to be MVP and all that. But Teddy Bridgewater, I see those pictures of him in the locker room. That dude looks so happy. And I saw on – I don't know if people subscribe to The Athletic or whatever – but they had an article about him where Saints players are like, that dude is really good and he should be starting for an NFL team. We see it every day in practice. So clearly he's having a good time and the Saints players are starting to see that he's really good. I mean, with the Jaguars hitting eject on Bortles, I just don't know where he's going to be staying with the Saints. But have you sort of changed your opinion on whether Teddy Bridgewater stays or goes? I sort of mean to maybe he might stay because he's apparently liked him so much.
I mean, the thing that gives me pause is Zach Strief, you know, basically telling us that, yeah, I mean, he disagreed when we said it's going to be one quarterback for the Saints next year, either Breeze or Bridgewater. I still feel that way, you know, and I could be wrong about this. And, you know, what Strief says carries a lot of weight because I don't know if he's speaking just personal opinion or if he knows something. But either way, if it's personal opinion, I value it a lot. And if he knows something, then obviously that's even more tangible. But I still just look at this as, I mean, you just got to think about this logically. You've got a guy on a one-year deal. You know, you got a guy that's fully recovered now from his injury. And he's good enough to start for at least 10 or 12 teams in the league. And I just think unless Breeze is not coming back next year, if I'm Bridgewater, like I'm about to be a free agent, there's just no way I'm not testing the market. So, and, you know, and the Saints aren't going to be able to pay him with some team that's wants him as their starting quarterback would.
Yeah.
So
but it depends where it depends. I think for him, it depends where though. Like if Jacksonville, they've benched Bortles, right? If Jacksonville wants him, that's a really good landing spot. If the Giants would want him and Eli would retire, you got Odell Beckham, you got Saquon Barkley, you got the New York market. Like that's a really good landing spot. But if like,
I mean, I also just think teams will look at it as he's had another year for his leg to heal.
Mm-hmm.
And during that time, he's been studying behind Drew Brees, who is playing at an MVP level and might win the Super Bowl this year. So, like, teams will find that valuable.
Yeah, and the thing is, people are arguing with me on Twitter. They're like, hey, do you either wait 2 years to get the keys to the Lamborghini or do you take the Toyota Camry right now? I'm like, who says Drew Brees is done after next year? Like, you think that maybe he, you know, he wants to spend time with him. But what if he's good again next year? Like,
I mean, if he's the MVP right now, like, how can we put an end date? You know,
if
he's the reigning MVP, I mean, we'll see, you know. I mean, I don't want to hand it to him before it's done. But, like, let's say he's the reigning MVP. I mean, I think Brees would seriously consider retiring if he's the MVP and wins the Super Bowl. Like, I mean, what better way to go out? So I could see him calling it a day. But let's say he doesn't and he wants to keep playing. Like, how could you say, like, no, we're going to go with Bridgewater?
Yeah, and the thing is, you don't know, you know, Brees could, he says he wants to play till 45. He very well might. And if you're, and the thing is with the people, I think they underestimate Bridgewater. If Bridgewater stays next year, that'll be 4 years where he hasn't played. And I know he's only 27 or whatever, but that's a long time to not play football.
Yeah.
And these guys, they're athletes. You only get one chance to be an NFL quarterback. And I don't know that he wants to do that, but that's an interesting topic. It'll be a topic, off-season topic. We'll probably rehash it over and over again. But any changes on this game that you, anything changed about your Monday pick from now that it's game day? Anything, any change in thought at all?
No, I still feel the same way. I just think the Saints are too solid. I think the Cowboys will give them a good game. And, you know, I think it might be a little close early, but the defense is just too confident and playing at too high of a level, you know. And I just think the Saints are so balanced. Like, the kicking game is, I mean, Will Lutz has missed, what, one kick all year. And Morstead doesn't even punt, but he's one of the best. So, like, kicking game is great. Defense is playing as best, as good as it has all season. Offense is one of the best in the league. Are the Saints number one in points right now per game?
Yes.
Scoring? The number one scoring offense. So,
yeah,
I mean, you know, I just think, like, you know, no matter what you throw at them right now, they're just too balanced. They're too good. So I still think it's like a 31-20 type game.
Yeah, I just don't see. I see one pathway for Dallas to win. They have to run the ball. The Saints sort of have to throw up, not all over themselves like Cleveland, but like they'd at least have to have like one or two turnovers.
But if they do that, see, the thing is, Ralph, like if the Saints do that, like anybody can beat them.
Like, it's the NFL. Like, they could lose to anyone on any given Sunday if they play like shit. But I when I look at the Cowboys, like, that's great that they're on a little bit of a run and Amari Cooper's helped their offense. That's great. But, like, they're a 6-5 team. And they did just run off a few wins in a row against mediocre teams. I mean, Washington was missing Alex Smith, and the Eagles just lost to the Saints 48-7. So, like, that's great that they beat those teams. But, like, the Saints crushed those teams, annihilated them. So
yeah, I just feel like the Saints are just – I have this feeling, and I've been saying it for a couple weeks, and it hasn't – I just feel like the Saints are just due for one of those performances. Not that they lose, but that they're just not this killing machine. And it'll just be kind of, like, clunky, and they're bad on third down. And it's just like – it's not that they're – not that Dallas is going to whip them, but you're just, like, in the third quarter, and you're like, this isn't what – this isn't this – fun 45-point killing machine that we're used to. And I just feel like they're due for, like, one of those games. But they keep proving me wrong every week, and they just keep throwing the hammer down. So so we'll see.
Like, you know what's interesting is, you know, when the Rams get in a tight game or a clutch playoff game, like, I still have questions about, is Jared Goff, you know, ready? Is he ready to win when, you know, or is he ready to come back on a team when all the chips are down? With Breeze, like, he has so much experience that, like, I don't really worry about the Saints not playing in close games. Like, they don't really need to get battle tested. And, if they do, like, I'm confident that they can win the close games too.
I want a close game because it's fun. I mean, the blowouts are fun too, but I want a close game. Like, but next week, I want the Saints to throttle Dallas and kill all their dreams, and I want people to watch First Take on Friday, and I want Stephen A. Smith to be so happy because the Cowboys are proven once again to be a fraud. That's what I want.
Yeah. Well, and also I think, you know, this is a good chance for Breeze to cement his MVP in front of a national audience.
Yep, he got.
Yeah, another thing to keep in mind is Saints have had a week rest. The Cowboys are playing on a short week.
Well, no, the Cowboys played Thursday too. So
that's right. You're right.
So they both have the week. But one last thing, and then we'll get out of here. You know, and it seems like a small thing, but the Saints players know that if they win Thursday, Sean Payton probably gives them an extra day, so they get an extra long break, right?
Yeah.
But if they win, he'll probably say come in Tuesday or whatever. But if they lose, they might have to come in Monday. So they know that, like, hey, we win, we get an extra day.
Get, like, a holiday,
Yeah, so, that, like, you have guys probably, like, have planned Vegas trips and different things for, like, the extended time off because it's, like, a mini-bye. And I know you're probably like, players don't care about that. Dude, players care about that.
Oh, I mean,
think about you in your real life. My company, when we hit our sales goal and we get off half-day Fridays, we celebrate like it's fucking Christmas, you know?
So it's a
huge deal, and it's a little bitty thing, but – I think that matters enough. I think the Saints will win. But anyway, patrons, you paid for it. You got it. It's the game day preview. Thanks for donating. We'll see you after.